Welcome to Christ Today. Heavenly Father, thank you for your loving kindness. I pray for a heart and a mind that yields to you. In Jesus' name, amen. Food and water is necessary to sustain our physical life. And that is what I will address in a few minutes. Today, thanks to God's blessings and thanks to man's diligent and thoughtful work, our country has abundant food and water. But in recent years, there have also been problems with our food supplies and with our water delivery. Our water delivery systems occasionally have a problem or some contamination. Our food supply occasionally has a problem or a contamination. When they occur, we hear about that problem splashed all over the news for a day or two, and then we don't hear about it again. See, as long as our system works well, it really does work well. And it is not especially comfortable to dwell on the salmonella outbreaks with something with our cantaloupe or some other food, maybe our fish or our eggs or our chicken supply. Contamination happens more frequently from food that originates overseas than it does from within our nation. Hey, do you remember that there was the dog food ingredients which originated in China that literally killed dogs in this country, many hundreds of them? Yes, we do have problems, but our blessing is so much greater. Me personally, I am reassured that when I eat and when I drink, that I am living according to God's will, and I also give thanks to God for that food and that drink, and I ask Him to bless it. In the past, when I've had a question about that food purity or that water's safety, I did also ask God to take away any harmful effects that it would otherwise have on me. And as far as I know, He did. So, hooray. And what about life now? I think there's all sorts of ways that we can examine life in big ways. And we ought to. Things like, is the Bible true? Ha! Yes, of course it is. And are we in the last days? Yeah, sure looks like it. And I think if we are in those last days, do we want to reread parts of the Bible that talk about the last days? I think of Matthew chapter 24 and Mark chapter 13 and Luke chapter 21. They all talk about the end of this age, which is often called the last days before Christ returns. So what are we to expect in that case? Well, the scripture tells us it's famine, earthquakes, and war. And also we are told to be not deceived. I mean, these are just the themes. Those are so clearly stated. So now what are we going to do about it? It's a question that it's personal, and we each have to decide for our own self what we do about it. And you know, don't you, that there are a whole lot of people who say, I'm just going to live by faith, or I'm just going to trust the Lord. And maybe they will say, I'm going to live by Matthew 6:25, where the Bible tells us to take no thought about what you will eat or what you will drink. And I wonder, are they just taking a little bit of thought, maybe, about what they're going to buy at the grocery store? Yeah, I just wonder about that. But it is the way that it is. And I think it's good for us to discern as much as we can and to give thought to it. Discern the times that we live in. Are we just about at the end of the age? You could sure make a good argument for it. So should we pay more attention to that Matthew chapter 24, Mark chapter 13, and Luke chapter 21? Various Christians warn us about some soon coming troubles, and they are looking for a day and an hour. They want to be able to predict it. But people have been wrong about the day and the hour so many times that so many people just hear about it and they just dismiss the whole concept that trouble is coming upon us. No, we don't know the day and the hour, but I think we are called upon to recognize the season. Yes, we are in that season. That's what I see. So I think we should try to look at it and recognize it and discuss it even. We Christians are not the only ones who recognize that we are in a season of trouble. There are various branches of government and many corporations that are telling us to get prepared. How often have you heard lately that everyone should have 3 days of food and water on hand? I've also heard that we should have 2 weeks of food and water on hand. And if you listen to the stories from first responders who have been on hand for some big natural disaster, well, they tell us that you should have 6 to 8 weeks of food and water on hand. Who knows what the best thing to do is, but having a little of it, starting that process, that I think is wisdom. That's me. You have to figure that out for yourself. So, we often think that we will have help, and that there will be people there to help us. And it's true, there will be. Often enough, there will be neighbors. Often enough, there will be churches. But it doesn't mean that you will have meaningful help the way you expect it. It just doesn't seem to happen. And it takes a good while for things to normalize after there is some sort of a natural disaster or troublesome time. Things just do not get back to normal quickly. They don't even resemble normal for months. Just think what this means. It means that if there is trouble coming, if there is a natural disaster, it's going to have more effect in your life than you think. You won't even be able to drink water. Only the bottled water that you have stored will be drinkable. Often enough, it's because your water source becomes contaminated, or the water supply main lines are broken. And this means no water will come out of your tap. So if either of these things happen, you can be without water for days or weeks. You won't have a lot of water to drink. You certainly won't have water to bathe in, to doing dishes. Well, it's just going to be a difficult situation. To talk about this kind of a problem occurring is so out of the normal life that we live in that it's just too hard for us to grasp. And that, of course, is why we don't prepare, because we cannot grasp that the situation could actually be like that. So I challenge you to think about it. Think about those what-ifs and be like those wise men who were in Proverbs 22:3 and Proverbs 27:12, and see trouble coming and avoid that trouble. That's a good idea. That's wisdom. So if you are without your normal supply of abundant water, what would happen? Well, we would drink less of it. We would wash our hands less. We would have just plain less cleanliness than we normally would have. And in a short amount of time, our health would get affected. Water is necessary to think, for one thing, for our brain to work well and for our body to work well and coordinated, water is essential. Water is also essential for keeping our hands clean and keeping the spreads of germs to a minimum. We wash our hands a lot. And if we don't, well, you don't want to touch your face, for instance. You don't want to touch your eyes and your mouth. You don't want any germs to get in your digestive tract. That just would lead to digestive problems. And that pretty much means that you're going to have some diarrhea or a little vomiting. You just don't know what could happen. But you want to take those steps to prepare for those just-in-case scenarios. That's what I'm talking about. And if there was a major event, our stores probably would be closed. And the medical items you think you could get just normally, they won't be there. They will either be sold out or in short supply somehow. There won't be the triple antibiotic ointment that you expect to be there. See, that's always a good one. That's good for skin irritations, any skin problems or healing or anything like that. So, triple antibiotic and anti-diarrhea medicine and something for an upset stomach. Those are kind of the basics. And then you add to that when you have an understanding about how to use the medicine. See, problems can occur with all sorts of areas, with our water, our drinking water. Yes, if our drinking water is not pure enough, we get all sorts of things happen. It's a large subject, drinking water and purity, and the best I think you can do is to examine it, because there's lots of answers for what the problem would be and how you deal with it. I know the simple problems are pretty much, those are pretty easy to solve, and that's what most of the problems will be. It will be Giardia, and that means that you either boil the water for a couple of minutes or you add 8 drops of standard bleach to a gallon of water and then let it stand for half an hour. And there's other things you can do. There's a SteriPen. That's a product that emits ultraviolet light. And that solves the problem, too. So you just don't know if the problems are going to be simple or complex. That's the thing. We just don't know. And I think the best answer is for you to look at these potential problems yourself and figure out what you would want to do to protect yourself from whatever it is. Bacteria, cysts, viruses in the water, organic matter, or inorganic matter. All those things can be in your water. It's a matter of looking at it, trying to figure it out, and then making a choice. As I said, the simple problems are pretty simple to fix, but the more complex ones are not. You will have to figure out where you're located and what kind of problems just might happen when you access that easy to reach water. Yeah, a lot of things don't have simple answers, but you have to do something to look and to figure out what to do. I know a lot of people like that big Berkey water filter, and that's just a gravity water filter. That has ceramic elements in it, and a lot of people like that a lot. You can get 2 or 4 elements, and depending on how fast you want your water. So there are solutions. There's different answers. But somehow you have to figure out what it is that you view as the problem and then how to solve it. Water is important for all of us, and I think of it as a part of the question of food. Now, I said I was going to address food, and now I'll do that. But to me, water is so essential because that is a greater need than food, the way I see it, that's for sure. So have a look at it and examine what your concerns are. I know that everybody has different different views on both water and food, and you can examine these subjects with a simple point of view or a complex point of view. And whatever it is, that's just going to be for you to figure out, because everybody has their own ideas. And so look at it. Look further into the matter. Remember the basics, which I see as water, food, and first aid. And then you can get as complex in those areas or other areas as you want. So somehow, those areas have to be addressed. The other ones are good to address. If you're concerned about that natural disaster or a grid down situation or whatever it is, those are things that you have to evaluate and decide what it is you want to prepare for, how long you want to prepare for, and, well, the details of it. So you get that orientation first, and then you'll be able to figure out what you're going to do or what groceries you're going to get. You know, speaking about groceries, the first step that you do for considering preparedness is get more of whatever it is you get that you normally eat. And you put that aside, especially if it's food that can be storable food. And that becomes your reserve. It's nothing special. It's just what you normally use, what you normally eat. Don't forget to pay attention to the expiration dates on that food, and you will have to rotate that food. That's what you do. And so I suggest you get a permanent marker pen and write on each food item or can the date that you bought it, with the month and the year. And then you will get to examine each the cans that you have stored, and figure out what conditions that they were stored in, and then you get to evaluate: did they get too hot? Did they get too cold? Should I use them right away? Can they wait another year? It's a matter of all these things that you look at. So, I also like to date things that are just plain and ordinary, like paper towels and toilet paper or other household items. I put a date on the soap or the canning jar lids or just general items like batteries. I want to have an idea of how old they are so that I can rotate them or just be aware. So I think knowing when you bought something is very good. If it has an expiration date, that's good to pay attention to also. One other thing that you should always pay attention to is if the can is dented or if the food packaging is damaged or whatever the packaging of what you have is, it ought to not be damaged. It keeps the moisture out. It keeps the contents secure. And so you want to watch for that and watch for rust if there's any rust on a can. It's just what you do. So that's the principle. The principle is to rotate your food. That's important, whatever it is. Rotate your supplies. And that is applicable whether you have a lot of supplies or a little supplies. It's just you want to pay attention to it. You want to take care of what you have for storing or for using or for giving it away. You just need to know what you have. Some people are good at watching over what their stored items are and doing the appropriate rotation. It took me a few years to realize that I was not doing a good job of rotating my food supplies. So I had to look for another answer to the food supplies, and right along at that same time, I found out that I liked baked bread and to grind the wheat and make things with it. So they kind of went together, and I found out that I wanted longer-term storage items, which was grains. The cans of food or things like spaghetti. Well, spaghetti has a long shelf life, by the way. But the point is I found out that I was not really good at rotating my supplies, my foods and things like that. So I had to change my focus on what I thought my food storage should be. And I got to like whole grains. I liked that very much. I liked it for storage food, and I liked it for eating. That has gotten to be what I would say is a good idea. I think whole grains are a wonderful idea for your storage. They last for decades, even longer. It just, you have to pay some little attention to what the storage conditions are, and maybe add something to it like an oxygen absorber, or a diatomaceous earth, or something that will help it in case it keeps the bugs at bay, and it keeps the oxygen out that the bugs need to breathe. So look at the whole grains, and they retain their nutritional value very, very well. And that's what I liked so much about it. You could have a wheat, and that lasted nutritionally very, very long. And I did find I liked wheat, and I also liked spelt. Spelt is the ancient parent to wheat. And I got to like spelt even better than I liked wheat. Hard red wheat is good for bread, and it has a slightly higher protein count than spelt. Spelt, I found out, it has a little bit slower release of its enzymes and of its proteins. So you get a slower release of the nutrition in it than just hard red wheat. So I got to like that better. Anyway, you get to look at what the different kinds of wheat are, because they have slightly different characteristics and slightly different taste and slightly different consistency. They all work for what you want for storage, but they also are all a little bit different. Soft white wheat is mostly used for cookies and pastries, and hard red wheat is usually used for bread. So I often enough will add spelt into either one of those two wheats, because I've gotten to like the taste of it, and it's not a whole lot different, but it is a little different. So there's all sorts of things you can do to add variety to your bread. You can add a flavor or a different grain. For instance, you can use rye grain. You can even use corn and grind that up. Just experiment and see what you like. And it adds variety to the normal food you eat, like bread. You can add things to your bread, like cut up little pieces of dried fruit, or raisins, or nuts, or chocolate chips even. It's just you make a variation in the bread, and it's good. You can increase or decrease spices or flavorings, or leavening, or vanilla. There's a lot of variation you can do. And I strongly suggest you look at all those things. And also important, freshly grind your flour, because the store-bought flour, once the berry is, the wheat berry is opened up, and it's exposed to the air, it rapidly loses its nutrition. So consider that for your food also. That's another reason why I like whole wheat. You can grind it in an electric grinder, and you can use a hand grinder to grind it in. And I've used both. Guess what? I prefer the electric grinder. It's a whole lot less work. But you will want to have a hand grinder for your emergency food supply. Yes, and that's what you'll need. So think about what you would need in that emergency food situation. You might not have electricity, so yeah, I get that manual wheat grinder. There's different grades. You don't have to buy the best and you don't have to buy the cheapest, but you can get a decent one, and they're usually a couple hundred dollars, like $150 or $300 or more. You will need the basic wheat that you need. That's pretty much $70 for 100 pounds, and spelt that I like, it costs about double that, $140 for 100 pounds. Wheat and rye and, well, rye and whole corn, they are a little bit less than wheat. So those are all things that you can consider. It does cost money, but then again, it costs money just to live and to buy the normal food we eat. I also like wheat because it can be sprouted. You just moisten it and rinse it every day or twice a day. And then for your efforts, what do you get? You get wheat sprouts, and it's a great source for your greens. You get chlorophyll from it, and you can grow your wheat sprouts as long as they are in a warm room, and then they grow. A little bit of sunshine, it doesn't even have to be in the sun, just near a window. And you can add variety to your sprouts also by adding bean sprouts. It's all good. There's lots of different things, but it does take your time and it does take your attention. Beans and rice is a good source of protein, and there's lots of choices of beans. Get the ones you like. Now, for long-term storage, beans don't last quite so long as wheat because they give off a little bit of gas, but they still will last 20 years. So, well, let's see. About that wheatgrass, some people like to have wheatgrass juice, and if you get a wheatgrass juicer, that makes it a simple matter to get a wheatgrass. They're like a grinder, except they have a long nose on them, and they cost about $40. So you just think about it. Remember all the good things. There's lots of good things. Wheat and wheatgrass is good. Beans are good. And all these things make for a variety in your taste buds and your diet. You can have a wide variety of beans. There's black beans. There's red beans. There's pinto beans. There's white beans and others. You can buy different legumes too, like lentils and split peas, and you can add those to your wheat bread also, or your spelt. There's lots of things you can do to make bread, lots of varieties, and some people even want to add a little or even a whole lot of white rice to their bread. Again, variety. There's so many things you can do. And about white rice. White rice does last for decades. It's a wonderful, fine food, and it just lasts and lasts. But brown rice does not last so well. Brown rice has more nutritional value, but it lasts for months. I don't even think it would last a year. And then, because of the oil in brown rice, it gets to smell strong, and it's not especially good then. So figure your brown rice has a limited life. But again, your white rice will last for decades. So what other ingredients do you want to store? There's lots of foods you can have. I think of the basics. The basics are sugar, salt, and oil, and flavorings. Dry yeast is good too. There's just lots of things. Everything that you get has a different character and a different quality. And of course, you can write to me and get my paper, which has ideas on all these things too. I'll tell you at the end of this broadcast. But like I said, sugar, salt, oil, and flavorings, and yeast, plus your wheat or spelt. For the sugar, you can get all sorts of sugar, white sugar, brown sugar. You can use honey or even molasses. people have different ideas for what they want, and you should get whatever you prefer. There are all sorts of things that just pretty much last forever. Salt is another one. That lasts just about forever, but it might get hard. Whatever salt you get, I so strongly suggest you get iodized salt, because everybody needs iodine, and there's hardly any sources of natural iodine. So get iodized salt. I guess there's a little bit of iodine in multivitamins and sure shellfish, but who knows if those will be available. So iodized salt. How about oil? Oil is essential. You need oil to maintain good nutrition, good health. It helps your body function. So have oil stored. I prefer a non-GMO oil, and that pretty much means the two easy choices are olive oil and safflower oil. And these are pretty much the only two oils that are GMO-free. But you can figure out what you like. The oil does store well. I don't know how long they recommend it for, but I know I have used olive oil that's been 5 years old, and it didn't have any negative effects on it that I could tell. So, 5-year-old oil? Yeah, you'll have to rotate that too, I guess, but those are my thoughts on the matter. Flavorings. Oh, yes, you need flavorings. The choices are almost endless. Besides salt, the very basic ones are pepper and vanilla and cinnamon and powdered onion, powdered garlic, and maybe tomato powder, too. Hey, there's so many choices for what your flavorings would be. It's just you choose. Some people wouldn't feel right if they didn't have cayenne pepper. Some people wouldn't feel right, well, if they didn't have something else. So flavorings are always good. And if you go without your flavorings for a while, just a little bit of it goes a long way. I know nutmeg is often a good one, too. You'll need yeast, or you'll want yeast. That will help your bread to rise. And yeast does last a pretty long time. You can get it in bulk for a lower price, too. I've heard of people having a culture that they use, and that is the yeast that they preserve. I don't know. I've only done it years ago, and I didn't pay enough attention to it, so it didn't survive. But some people like that, especially the sourdough yeast, and they just keep it going, and it works really well for them. You'll have to figure out how it works for you. Other flavorings? Sure. Whatever you like, you get. It can be dehydrated vegetables. That's another good one. You can buy them in the number 8 cans, and you just have to make sure you keep the can relatively free of contamination, and they last for years and years. Dehydrated peas, dehydrated carrots, those are the cheap ones and the simple ones. And when you're hungry, they add a whole lot of flavor to a simple dish. Yeah, we are so used to having lots of definite flavors in life. That's just our life. So it's not easy to imagine how a few dehydrated vegetables like peas and carrots could add a richness of flavor, but it does. And you can always add pepper. Have an abundant supply of pepper. All these things just, they make a small difference, but it's pretty big. It sure makes a plain old bowl of rice or a plain old bowl of boiled wheat. It adds a lot to it. Yeah, I can tell you about it. Well, after you do without food for a while or fancy, nice food, everything tastes good. And so I think that it would eventually lead to that position that we would come to appreciate even the simple things. And that's just that's just how life is. With food, you learn it, you get to figure it out. Now, it doesn't mean that you would choose these things if you just had a situation. If you had five cousins coming over unexpectedly and you needed to make some food, you probably wouldn't want to use your emergency storage food. And if you couldn't go to the store, you probably wouldn't use your emergency storage food for dinner either. But it's still really good to have it there for the just-in-case emergency. And that's what I'm talking about, the just-in-case emergency. So put some of it away. It is good, and you do get to like it. One other important item that I like to suggest is a cast iron pot. A big cast iron pot with a lid. You can use that for all sorts of cooking. You can even cook your bread in it, bake your bread in it. They work good. And it's a wonderful source of iron, cast iron. It just gets a little bit of it gets into the food, and that gets into your body, into your blood, and it makes you a whole lot healthier. It's just a good thing for your health. So, cast iron, even if it's too heavy to use in the normal circumstances, you should have some of it for your just in case. And it holds the heat, and it doesn't burn the food so easily. It's just good. And for water, you will want to pay attention to the flavorings that you use for water. And coffee and tea are great. So are various powdered beverages. They're all just great. You don't have to use as much as you're accustomed to using. For tea and coffee, you can drink that pretty, diluted, and it's still good. It's just that we're not used to having it weak. But if you don't have very much of it, you're glad to have it. And that's the same for those powdered beverages. If you don't have anything, you're glad to have it. It's good to have for your drinking water, because with what you're treating it, for instance, if you were to use those 8 drops of bleach per gallon, it's good to have something that just covers the flavor a little bit. If you're boiling your water on the stove, you might have a smell of the smoke in your water. So a little bit of flavoring goes a long way. You're not mixing the drink that they say to mix with it. You're just having a little bit of flavor, and it's really good, and it's not expensive. So think about it. Yeah, get some of those things on hand. The quantities of everything you get is completely up to you. Nobody knows the answers to that. It depends on your space to store things and how much money you have to spend on your purchases. And remember, anything you do is going to be good and helpful. You can have a little bit. You can store it in a 5-gallon plastic bucket. You can store it in a 55-gallon drum. It's just that you do something. You can put it in Ziploc bags. The idea is for you to store up for the just in case. Now, maybe you use that food also, and if you do, you'll want a little nicer container. I know I've liked and I've used those steel 55-gallon drums for storage for the dry goods. And for water, you can buy the 55-gallon plastic drums. They're good for storing water, and you add a little bleach to it, and it's a great thing. You can buy those drums used. They wash them out. They're clean. They're dry. And they cost between $25 and $50 each. They're a bunch more money if you buy them new, and you can buy them new, too, but used works pretty well. It just, you have to figure out what your position of what you want to do is. It's different for everyone, and you have to look at it. I know there's lots of people who give advice. They're preparedness experts, there are corporations, there's FEMA. everybody has their ideas on what to do, but really, it's for you to figure out. Now, FEMA says that if one, you know, FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, well, they figure out that if one person was to use wheat as their primary food for 1 year, they would eat 270 pounds of wheat. Now, 270 pounds of wheat sounds like a lot, but if you divide it per day, that's only 3/4 of a pound per day. So, just think about it. Oh, and a steel, one of those steel drums, it holds just about that much, about 250, 270 pounds of wheat in one of those drums. So that's another consideration. Oh, and remember how fast food can go. If you are thinking of you and your spouse and a couple of kids, maybe a friend or two, and add wheatgrass to that, well, your 1 year supply of food gets real close to a 30 to 60 day supply of wheat. So it can go pretty fast. You just get to figure it out. So think about all these things and just keep thinking. you're going to have to eat, though. If you want to live, you have to eat. And the amount of food is completely a question that everyone has to answer. You will figure that out over time, but it would be nice to know beforehand, wouldn't it? In my experience, I will just give you another little one here, that the FEMA 270 pounds, well, that's a good place to start. But if you are actively working, if you are walking a lot, working a lot, you will eat more wheat, and wheat is good. I think you'll use 400 pounds of wheat in a year. That's me. That's what I suggest. So I don't know where you get your, who figures out what, but somehow you have to come to decisions about what you buy. And there's a lot of questions. Do you supplement it with beans? Maybe you just need 200 pounds of wheat if you also add 200 pounds of beans or other legumes, or if you add barley to it, or white rice, or the honey or the sugar, vegetable oil. All those things have a calorie content, and they all make a difference. And unfortunately, it's not like you have the answers that are just available. You don't know these things, so you have to make assumptions. You have to guess at what it is that makes sense to you. It's not like there are real answers for this. I guess if you were in the military, they would tell you just what the answers were. But most of us aren't. And most of us would eat different from what they eat anyway. So somehow you have to have a grasp of what it is your orientation is, and you have to come up with things that make sense to you. It is to me, it's sensible to have a storehouse. You have a supply of food, and you get to figure out what that is and how much of it is. I think of the seasons and how much really would you want. Would you want any wheat for planting? See, that's another thing. If you're figuring that you're going to plant wheat and harvest it for the next year, I mean, that's what farmers do. That's what the Bible says to do. You plant and you harvest. So what the real answer is, yep, yes, that's one that you just have to weigh and make sense of the best you can. I don't know that anybody can really tell you what the answers are, because there's several of them. But you look at it, and you try to figure out something, see if what you're doing is for planting a crop or for just plain eating. And if we are going to plant wheat, I think we are going to do it in our backyards. We're going to become like subsistence level of farmers, where we're going to use the best methods we can to farm. And to me, that speaks of a deep soil bed. That means you're going to dig probably a 2 foot deep area for your garden so the roots can get into it. You're going to dig 2 feet down and put loosened soil back into that 2 feet by whatever it is, 2 feet by 3 feet by 8 feet by 12 feet, something like that. And then you grow your wheat in there, you grow your vegetables in there, and it has good water retention, and it allows those plant roots to spread easily. So that is an idea for if it gets to that point where you were doing farming in your backyard. I think that is the way to do it. That's how you do it when you have to make your space count. Now the big farmers, they have big machines, they have big fields, and they don't need to do that. But I think if it's an individual's area, they have to be concerned with the best soil situation that they can, whether it's for vegetables or for grain. You just have to look at those ideas. So keep that idea in the back of your mind if you ever need it someday. So those are my preferred methods of food by using grains. I like grains a lot. But another good idea is to just use those plain and simple 5 gallon buckets of food. You can buy them pretty cheap. The wide variety in prices, though, and a wide variety in what is in those 5 gallon buckets. You might find that a 5 gallon bucket has enough food to last 10 days. It might have enough food to last 2 weeks. It might have enough food to last 1 month. They're all different, and you have to evaluate what is in that bucket of food and what you want. Now, I do like those food buckets, and I think they're a good choice because they're simple and they're easy. You just have to use it properly, and that means you have to be accustomed to small servings. You have to be organized and disciplined to make that food last as long as they say it should last. It's still a good idea, but you have to be comfortable with what the food is and recognize that it's all pretty much processed food. Usually it needs cooking. Or heating up. It's just one of those things that you have to examine and see if it fits what you want. 5 gallon buckets are really nice because they are easy to store. They can stack very well. And for the money, those 5 gallon buckets are a really good deal. It's just you have to make decisions about what you want. Maybe that is the best food for you, for your just-in-case situation, but you have to evaluate it. There's nobody else that can evaluate it but you. So have a look at it and make good ideas, have a good thought process. They are good for a lot of people. You'll have to figure out if that's good for you or not. But I do advocate that everyone should have some food on hand. What's the best? Like I said, I like living food, and that means whole grains. You get to figure that out, though. All sorts of things. There's expensive ideas, and there's inexpensive ideas, and it's all relative. I don't know what they would end up being, and you don't know, but you have to start someplace, and even if you get a little bit, get something. Speaking about expensive foods, there are expensive foods. There's two kinds that are really good and really expensive. One kind comes in a plastic container, and it's called a ready-to-eat meal, or meals ready-to-eat. That's what the military uses, MREs. Now, it says... I've heard comment, I should say, that they're very good unless you eat them for more than a few years, maybe more than 5 years. I don't remember how the time frame was, but it was something like that. So the MREs is a good choice for having food, just like it says, ready to eat. They're very good. A little bit expensive, or a lot expensive, depending on how you view it. But they are tasty. Good stuff. And the second kind of an expensive meal is dehydrated foods. You get those because they're intended for backpackers. And at all the outdoor stores, they will have both foil-wrapped foods and in a vacuum-sealed package, and dehydrated foods. They're very good. They're just on the expensive side. They're very lightweight to carry. And some of the meals are you just add water to them, and other of the meals are ones that you have to cook. It's just, you see what you see. But you have to look. Yeah, they're good. They're a little expensive. Have a look. And if you want to have grab-and-go food on a budget, what you can get is those Coast Guard rations. Coast Guard rations. It is a block of food. They compress it. It's all sorts of things. And there again, I wouldn't want that for the long term. I wouldn't want that to have very regularly. But if you want something that's just going to be food, you take a block or two of that food and a few waters, and you've got food. It is an alternative. I think those foil packages are about 4 inches by 5 inches by 6 inches. They cost, I think, between $5 and $10 for one of those packages, and you just eat from it a little each meal, and it keeps you going. Have water with it, too. You need the water. So bottles of water and that Coast Guard rations, and it will keep you going. It'll keep you alive. It's good if you don't have anything else. So all these things are, there's a lot of alternatives. And how can I not think of this military guy that I heard talking about the rule of threes? They call it the survival, wilderness survival, rule of threes. It says if you can survive 3 minutes without air, you can survive 3 hours without shelter in a harsh environment, and you can survive 3 days without water and 3 weeks without food. Well, yeah, you can survive, but oh boy, it's pretty tough. If you have to do that, you do live, you do survive, but it weakens your body. It's not a good thing. You don't want to use that as your survival rule because it weakens you so much. You need recovery time if you ever get into such a stressed situation. So, sure, keep it in mind that you can survive like that, but that's really bare-bone survival. You want to have your situation in a way so that you don't have to make it to that point, get to that point of almost perishing. No, you want to think about what you're doing. You want to have an approach that is concerned with what you want, what provisions you should have. And it takes a thinking and it takes a plan. It's an idea of concepts. Today, we are all about concepts. There are concepts all over the place. You get to form your own ideas, and you get to the consequences of your decisions. So as you go through life, I think it's good to make good decisions. Foresee what is coming, and make the decisions that will be best for you. Make adjustments as you go along. That's life. Oh, and we do have to adjust. There are lots of things that we wish we had done different, things we had wish we had done better, and we make adjustments. We live and we learn. We keep going. That's life. Yeah. So that's a part of the preparation part too. also is we get to see what we have done, and we make decisions as we learn more, and we make different decisions. That's just the way it is. So for whatever it is you're expecting, or for whatever it is you're going through right now, I hope that you can clearly see that it is important to prepare. Now, I think of two levels of preparedness. One is preparing for this physical world, and the most important part is preparing for eternity. Choose that wonderful eternity with Jesus instead of a tormented eternity without him. So if you've not made a committed choice, make a committed choice. The evidence is available for you to look at what is rational and sensible, following your understanding or your emotions. All these things are good, but look at what it takes to belong to him. You have those basics to love God and love your neighbor. Those are his commandments. There's other commandments too, and that's what we want to pay attention to as we go through our searching and our understanding. There's a lot going on in this world these days, and we don't know what will happen. We never know. There's just so many things going on. There's wonderful things, and there's problems. There's car crashes, and there's just accidental deaths. So we have to be prepared for all the things that could happen, whether it's a physical situation or whether we need God in our life. All these things are important. So you just make sure that you have made the decisions that are best for your eternal life. Our country is divided now, and we are seeing why we could have these things that make a difference for us and why they're important. Our country is divided, and it's going to divide further. Will a fall happen? I think the Bible pretty much talks about that. It says that a kingdom divided cannot stand against itself, and our nation is divided on so many levels. So I want you to consider that we may have more troubles in the future. So examine what it is that you should do. Find out that preparedness, physically and spiritually, it is important. So remember that if you want to hear this broadcast again and my ideas about this water and food preparedness, go to www.christtoday.org. Listen again. I have other broadcasts that you can listen to also. They're all different, but many of them have an element of preparedness to them. So if you'd like my preparedness pamphlet, send a stamped self-addressed envelope to John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 959727. I say that again, 95927. John Stephenson, P.O. Box 7222, Chico, California, 95927. Thank you for listening. And until next week, may you walk with God and may God walk with you. Give me passion that pours out to every nation. Yeah. Shine your light.